The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention voted unanimously yesterday recommending Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine for children ages 5 to 11 years old. So now the big question is, when will Idaho be giving out those shots? Joining us today are Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, as well as a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, and Dr. Stephen Coates, Associate Medical Director of Primary Care in the Magic Valley, Jerome, and Wood River. And they are both joining us to answer that question and more. Thank you both for joining us today.
Hi, Gemma.
And remember, if you have questions for our medical experts, get them into us. Email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. So just about an hour ago, Idaho Health and Welfare said that vaccines for children 5 to 11 years old will be available in our state next week. The Pfizer pediatric vaccine is going out to doctors, to clinics, and pharmacies in the next few days. So, Dr. Pate, how is the vaccine for younger kids different from those 12 and up? And I ask that because they can't necessarily just give the Pfizer vaccine that they have in stock right now.
Yes. So for practical purposes, this is really the same vaccine, but just at a reduced dose. Basically, the children ages 5 through 11 will be getting about a third of the dose that those over 12 would be getting. So it's a reduced dose. There is different packaging and preparation of it. There's some differences in the storage and so forth. But for the average person's interest, it's going to be basically the same vaccine, just a reduced dose. It will be the same schedule. So they'll get, the children will get their first shot and then should get their second shot 21 days or later following that shot. And that will consist of their primary series.
And we should note that I know I've had people reach out to me today saying how can pharmacies and the such be getting appointments on the calendar if Idaho doesn't have their vaccines available. But I believe, Dr. Pate, that that's differed per health district. Correct? Because I was able to sign my child up today. I mean, he can't get his shot until Monday, but I signed him up this morning.
Well, that's right. So it is, you know, there's differences. The vaccine is received by the state, but it's distributed by the health districts. And also each different provider has to get their own processes in place. So for example, I talked to the CEO of Primary Health Medical Group last night. He said people will be able to sign up for vaccines starting this afternoon, and there should be an announcement forthcoming. I checked with the CEO of St. Al's. They anticipate beginning their vaccines on November 8th, so about 5 days from now. I talked to the CEO of St. Luke's. He indicated that they are making some changes to the Epic system that they use, the electronic medical record, to accommodate this. And they probably will be starting to vaccinate sometime between the two, between Primary Health and Say Now. So everybody's going to have to stay tuned and check, but pretty soon you will be able to be signing your children up, and then it just, you choose your provider, and that will determine what day they can actually start.
Dr. Cutts, I want to bring you into the conversation. As we mentioned, you were down in the Twin Falls area. Yes. Curious about how things are going in your area in regards to COVID, because we do know at least statewide we're starting to see some numbers, some positive numbers come down, positive case numbers come down.
Yes, so it's exactly what you just said. For 3 to 4 weeks now, we've seen our coronavirus number cases going down. The average person who gets admitted to the hospital has been sick for a week, around a week, just a little bit longer. And so understandably, it took a little bit longer for our hospitalizations to start coming down. We are on our way down on hospitalizations. We can definitely feel a little bit less pressure on our shoulders as a provider. We're seeing our numbers in our primary care clinics, our ERs, our quick care clinics, definitely getting back to more of a normal level. So we feel like we're coming out the other side of this tunnel at this time.
So where does that put you in regards to crisis standards of care? Because my understanding is that the state is still under that.
Yeah, we have been utilizing providers who had recent experience in the hospital but don't currently practice regularly in the hospital. They've just recently been pulled out back to regular clinic. So from this from my perspective, my vantage point, I think we're getting close to being able to step back from crisis standards.
Mm. Dr. Payne, speaking of crisis standards of care, I think there is still, unfortunately, misinformation out there in regards to needing to be under crisis standards of care, but also number of deaths, et cetera. So Opal wrote us in today, and we touched on this, but months ago. So she wrote in, and I want to read you the question. She says, I'm curious if you could explain information I hear in the public about hospitals falsifying death rate information because they get money for COVID-related deaths. Is this true? Are hospitals labeling deaths as COVID-related deaths when there is another reason?
Well, thank you for that question, Opal, and the opportunity to clarify this. This started as one of the many conspiracy theories because some people wanted to send the message that COVID's not so bad. There's not really that many people dying from it. What's happening is that hospitals are coding those deaths as COVID deaths when they're not really COVID deaths so they can make more money. So that was the conspiracy theory going out there, that don't believe the death numbers because they're inflated. Well, that's not true. First of all, some of your listeners know I'm also a healthcare attorney. Let me tell you that if hospitals were doing that, that is a criminal offense. And they would be prosecuted for it. And the consequence can be that they actually lose their ability to participate in the Medicare program. That would, at least for the hospitals in Idaho that I know, that would put them all out of business. They're not going to, first of all, they wouldn't act that way and do something that really amounts to fraud. But second of all, it would be extremely foolish to do that because they are putting their whole organization at risk. So that is a conspiracy theory. I can't tell you that there's not some hospital somewhere in the country that has been doing it. If they have, it's illegal and they're going to be in big trouble. But that is not a practice here in Idaho. I'm quite confident, and you can believe those death numbers. And so that's just a conspiracy theory.
I appreciate that.
Absolutely, Dr. Coates.
I get that a lot in clinic face-to-face with patients, even patients that I've known for a decade. Usually my response is I look them in the eye and tell them that they're looking at the person who signs death certificates. Additionally, this healthcare community, we're small. We know each other. There's only a couple thousand of us statewide. I know hundreds of doctors. I don't know a single doctor who would falsify a death record so that he or she could make a little more money. And I found that to be somewhat effective with patients when I'm having that conversation, but it's exactly what Dr. Pate said. It's illegal. It puts my ability to have a license to practice medicine at risk to lie about what someone died from. I don't see it. It doesn't happen.
I appreciate the clarification on that because it is something that seems to come up over and over again. With that said, we're going to take a quick break. If you have questions for our medical experts, email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Continuing our conversation with our medical experts today as they answer your questions about the coronavirus. If you have a question, email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Our panel today, Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, and Dr. Stephen Coates, Associate Medical Director of Primary Care in the Magic Valley, Jerome, and Wood River. And do remember that we are talking with our doctors today for general education and information for our listeners. So always do check with your own provider for more in-depth information. With that said, Dr. Pate, Kristen wrote in this morning asking, if my child was asymptomatic with COVID-19, unbeknownst to us, would there be any problem for them to receive the vaccine if they had COVID?
No, and it's currently recommended that they still would be vaccinated, just as adults. The challenge for those folks that have had COVID, while unquestionably many do have some degree of immunity, and probably a number have fairly robust immunity, we cannot at this time tell who is who. And we see twice as many, recent studies showed five times as many, but we see somewhere between 2 to 5 times more reinfections with people that previously had COVID than we see of breakthrough infections of people that got previously vaccinated and then got infected. So we do still recommend vaccination. We don't do that while the person is still sick with the COVID. We let them recover from that, but we do recommend vaccination, and it's perfectly safe. That is giving vaccine to people that have had COVID does not pose any additional safety concern.
Dr. Coates, Shelley wrote in today saying, I was able to get appointments for both of my children today for the COVID-19 vaccine. My 5-year-old currently has a cold. She has tested negative for COVID on both the rapid and PCR test. Should she still be able to get the vaccine today?
That's a great question. The right answer is I would defer that to their trusted healthcare provider. Most of the time, if someone has a mild illness, they can go ahead and receive their vaccines. But without knowing that individual, how they're doing today, without being able to see them, that's going to be a difficult question to answer.
No, but good advice. And maybe call their pediatrician.
Yes.
Dr. Pate, a recent survey showed why parents in Idaho are hesitant about getting their kiddos vaccinated. The majority said that they're concerned about side effects. That's 44%. 20% said they're not sure if children need it. 24% are waiting to see if the vaccine is safe. 24% say they don't trust the government. And 3% say they don't believe in vaccination. Can we talk a little bit about this? Because it does show me, frankly, that quite a few people are not against the vaccine. They're just concerned for how it would impact their child.
Absolutely. And Jim, I'm glad you brought this up. I've actually talked to quite a few parents who are not anti-vax. They themselves have been vaccinated, but they're just questioning, well, I get why I need to be vaccinated, but why does my child need to be vaccinated? And I get it. It's a good question, because as we all know, at least with the variants that we've seen so far, adults are disproportionately impacted relative to the children. I will say, though, as we have seen the variants progressing, we've all also seen much more infections in children. And when you do have more infections in children, then you are going to see some of these bad outcomes. And so I think that here's the reasons why you want to get your children vaccinated. We started out with the elderly and those with medical conditions because those were at most risk of dying. But with children, it's different. With children, it's several things. Number one, we have to decrease the transmission of this infection, or we are going to get more variants. And those variants may threaten all of us, even those that have had COVID and even those that have been vaccinated. And we can't really get the transmission of the disease down without vaccinating children, because children do get infected, even if they're often less ill, and they do transmit it. So children have to be part of getting people vaccinated. Secondly, vaccination, as we've talked about, is our way out of this. I listened to the first part of your of the show, and you were talking about the election results. And, you know, mm-hmm. it was clear that voters want kids in school. They don't want masks. They don't want, you know, they want things to go back towards normal. That's going to be very tough if we don't get children vaccinated. But if we do, we can get schools back to normal. A third thing, and Gemma, you and I talked about this last week, the focus should not just be on death. The focus needs to be on the fact that we don't want kids to get sick. We don't want kids to end up in the hospital. And even when adults or children survive, there can still be a lot of long-lasting impacts from infection. And we don't even know all of those impacts, but it could definitely affect those children for a long period of time to come. So the best thing is we want to get kids vaccinated so we can decrease the transmission of this disease so that we can get back to normal. Grandparents want to see those grandkids. That's going to be a challenge if kids aren't vaccinated. Everyone wants school to get back to normal. That's going to be a challenge if we don't get our kids vaccinated.
And if I can interject, well said, Dr. Pate. This is from an FDA news release from October 29th, 2021. At that time, they reported that U.S. COVID cases in children 5 through 11 made up 39% of cases in individuals under 18. And up to that date, around 8,300 COVID-19 cases in children 5 through 11 resulted in hospitalizations and 146 deaths. So it does kill children age 5 to 11. It does cause severe illness. And it's clear from our vaccine trials that the benefits greatly outweigh the risks, a 90% decrease in risk of contracting COVID by having the vaccine at the 10 microgram dose.
And I believe that the FDA, and maybe it was the CDC, came out with what the trial had shown, which really the worst side effect for children is a sore arm. And going off what you said with those statistics, Dr. Coates, is we know just from listening to the Idaho Health and Welfare news briefing yesterday that there have been children who have gotten COVID here in Idaho that have had long COVID, that there are children who have been hospitalized, even if they got a very mild case of it. The pediatrician who was on, Dr. Lisa Barker, yesterday, in fact, talked about a case that she had of a child, of a six-year-old, who had a very mild case of COVID. A few weeks go by, he ends up being hospitalized. So, I mean, it's everything that both of you have said about why we need to get children vaccinated.
Yeah, and I think it's also telling, Gemma, that when you look at the votes by the members of the FDA committee and the CDC's committee, both votes were essentially unanimous that all of these vaccine experts concluded that the benefits outweighed the risks. And, you know, like Dr. Coates said, you know, right now, if you look at who's getting infected, it is children and young adults. And we do see bad outcomes, and we can't always predict who's going to have a bad outcome. And again, as you mentioned, even if you survive, long COVID can be really devastating to kids. And I just hope that, you know, we need to have a little internal consistency in our thinking. for all those parents that were worried about the psychological effects of kids having to wear masks, we need to be balanced, and you need to understand there's going to be a lot of psychological effects, many that we don't even understand, if those kids get COVID. So let's just protect our kids. You know, it's not all about death. It's also about, we don't want our kids sick. We don't want potential complications. Let's keep our kids healthy. And the bonus is, if we get enough kids vaccinated, we get to get back to normal.
And I will say this before we go to break, just as a mom, being able to make that appointment for my 9-year-old today was life-changing. I mean, I'm going to get emotional, so I'm going to try to get it together. We have talked about this on the show before. Children have sacrificed so much. We have asked so much of children, I believe, just as a mom. What I have seen my children have to sacrifice, what we have asked of our children. So just as a parent, to any other parent who is listening, who you might be hesitant about this, we've asked a lot of our kids. And I think we all want normalcy for our children. Again, my apologies for getting emotional a bit. Dr. Pate, as you know, we've been talking about this for 18 months.
Oh, yeah. Well, and Gemma, you're right to be emotional. We have all worried about our kids and our grandkids. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of those kids that, you know, for example, my 8-year-old grandson told me, Papa, I can't wait till I can get my shot, because he wants to get back to normal. And he doesn't want to think about the potential that he could get infected and make somebody else sick, even if he does fine. And so I think you're right. Children have sacrificed a lot. It's our turn to protect them. And I'll tell you what, when you see one of these children in the hospital struggling to breathe, having to have that big, it's a special kind of respirator that we put on people who need help breathing, but we're trying to keep them off a ventilator. Let me tell you, all you need to do is see one of those cases, and you'll say, it is well worth getting our kids vaccinated so that my kid or somebody else's kid doesn't have to go through that.
And I will say this, my 9-year-old was very happy to get the news before school today that we're finally in a position to get him vaccinated. More with our medical experts next. If you have a question, get it in, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Continue our conversation with our medical experts right now. Our panel today, Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, as well as a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, and Dr. Stephen Coates, Associate Medical Director of Primary Care in the Magic Valley, Jerome, and Wood River. And I swear, Dr. Pate, maybe one of these days I'll get through the program without getting emotional. But man, it has been a long 18 months, I will say that.
For all of us.
So, right. With that said, Becca in Boise wrote in, and Dr. Coates, maybe you can answer this. This is interesting. She says, I've heard that COVID-19 can cause inflammatory problems. I was wondering if COVID is even worse if you already have an inflammatory disease. Does it make the pre-existing condition worse?
That's a good question to ask. Of course, it's going to be unique to each person. We do see some health conditions that might be in remission and come out of remission when they're exposed to something that causes inflammation. In that sense, the answer is yes. There isn't good data for me to point to on that at this moment, but we absolutely see inflammation playing a very large part in patients who end up hospitalized and die from this condition, including children.
Mm. Dr. David Pate, Rilla from Salmon wrote in, and she says, I'm writing because I'm concerned about traveling during COVID. My husband and I are seniors, but we are in need of traveling. We need to drive, and we need to do an overnight stay in a motel. So our question is, how safe is it to be overnighting in a hotel? We're very conscientious about sanitizing. We'd also take our own food, so no eating out. We have both been vaccinated and we'll get our boosters this month.
Well, that's a great question. And it sounds like this listener has been being very responsible by getting fully vaccinated. Obviously, that trip will be safer after they get their boosters. And generally, we like to see people give a couple of weeks for the immune response to get really going from the booster. So if the travel is scheduled after that, another really positive factor is just going to be, if I heard correctly, it's going to be travel in their car. Obviously, if you're in your car traveling and both of you are fully vaccinated, that's a lot safer than getting on some other form of transportation where you're going to be with people that you don't know their status, such as an airplane or train or something like that. So not too many concerns there. A lot of hotels are doing very good things. A lot of them have check-in where you can do it online instead of having to go up to the desk. A lot of them are giving you a keyless entry, so you don't even have to handle that. So what you might do is just go online, wherever it is you believe that you're going to stop along your trip. Just look at the hotels and see what precautions they're taking. Generally, it's going to be fairly safe. A newer hotel may be a better option than an older one because of the air handling system, those kinds of things. Depending on when you do travel, if you have the option to open your windows, that may be additional benefit. But it sounds like you're doing all the right things. This is not what you're describing is not going to be high risk. The other thing I always do is just advise people, wherever you're traveling to, just check and see what is the level of disease transmission that is in that state or country that you're traveling to. Obviously, for example, this would not be a time that I'd want to travel to Alaska and some other states even around us that are doing much worse. So that's another thing you can check.
Before we go, I would love an opinion from thoughts from both of you on this question from Karen. She writes in, how does one convince more Idahoans to get vaccinated? Can vaccinated Idahoans help in the effort in some way? Dr. Coates, I'll have you start.
That's a great question. I've thought about it. I've compared it to World War I with my colleagues a number of times. It's like trench warfare. You got to do it one by one in individual conversations, in people who you know and trust. So you're unlikely to convince someone who is a stranger to you, who absolutely knows that COVID is a hoax. But you know, your good friend, your neighbor, your uncle or aunt, who you've been around for years and know and trust, that might be someone you can be effective with. And don't be too hard on yourself is what I tell a lot of people. If you can move someone from being absolutely against the vaccine to maybe considering it, that was a success, even if they didn't go to get the vaccine. For what it's worth, with this most recent COVID surge, I've had a much easier time talking patients into it. And the reason for that is so many more of them have experienced their loved ones, their close friends, getting really sick with it, dying from it, getting onto social media and saying, really, I got to eat crow because I've been anti-vax, but you don't want to go through what I just went through. So I would encourage listeners to think of it as, I'm going to have a one-on-one conversation. I'm going to be okay with the fact that most people aren't going to now go get the vaccine, but my conversation may result in sometime down the line, that person getting that vaccine.
Dr. Pate, we have about a minute left.
Okay, great. I'll bring it home. I think Dr. Coates was just right. I would add, listen to what their concern is and in a non-judgmental way and see if you can address that. The other two things is tell them that you've been vaccinated. Tell them what your experience was. And the last thing is a lot of people holding out, it's because they're worried about them. the side effects I'm going to have or what's going to happen to me. Tell them how much relief you have knowing that because you're vaccinated, you're protecting people you love and care about.
Such good advice. Thank you both so much. We've been talking with Dr. David Pate and Dr. Stephen Coates. Of course, our medical experts will be back next week. If you have questions for them, get them in. IdahoMatters@boisestate.edu. I appreciate both of you so very much. Thank you for your insight and your wisdom.
Thank you, Gemma.
Thank you, Gemma.
And I want to thank all of you for joining us today. Our producers are Frankie Barnhill and Samantha Wright. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It is Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.